First, it's the week in Washington. We're less than a week away from the beginning of an impeachment trial, the second for former President Donald Trump. Impeachment managers for the House of Representatives and lawyers for the former president have each submitted formal arguments for their respective sides. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you going to follow this impeachment trial closely? Do you think senators should vote to convict the former president on this charge of inciting insurrection? What do you wonder about how the Senate will handle this? Along with other business, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor for NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've got some previews now of this upcoming trial, the opening arguments in effect from both sides. What stood out to you about the arguments we did and didn't see here?
Yeah, we saw both sides sort of lay out what case they're going to be making over next week's trial. And I think one of the first things that really jumped out at me, aside from what we would expect in the Democratic case, was a really robust argument about the constitutionality of all of this. You know, this is one of those instances, unlike the last impeachment, where, you know, we were talking about a telephone call that none of us heard and that couldn't be replayed. We're talking about events that everyone watched on television. And in the case of the senators who are judging this trial, they lived it. So there's not much doubt about what happened. But whether or not the Senate should be having this hearing and should be going forward with this trial has sort of become one of the most central questions. And we saw in the Democrats' argument, the sort of impeachment briefings that they laid out, that they're going to make what is really actually a conservative legal argument. They are going to go back to what the founding fathers said and to what would have been understood at the time by the drafters of the Constitution for how impeachment should work. What conservative lawyers and judges would call sort of an originalist approach to interpreting the Constitution. And I think we're going to see that play out in the course of the trial as Democrats try to sort of use a Republican argument to make their case that this whole thing is constitutional and that it is right and proper for the Senate to be conducting the trial.
And that's part one of the argument. Then there's the charge itself. Democrats making a case trying to tie together the president's behavior and statements from Election Day, basically through January 6th. What was the case they're making? What's the case they're laying out to say, yes, in fact, then President Trump incited insurrection?
Right. They're pointing to sort of a series of events. They're saying that the president encouraged his supporters to come. He used language that he knew was going to encourage them, that we saw intel and other law enforcement agents beginning to collect information that these supporters of his were going to engage in this type of activity or wanted to engage in this type of activity. And then that he got up on that day and told people to walk to the Capitol. He told people to go use language like fight, telling his supporters that they needed to stop what he described as a theft from occurring. And then on the other side of that, we saw the president's folks trying to sort of make the case that because this attack, this mob was pre-planned, right? That some of the participants had clearly been planning to engage in this activity, that meant actually he hadn't incited it, that they would have done it no matter what President Trump said. And that had he stayed inside the White House that day, they would have gone ahead anyway. And that means that it wasn't his fault.
And the president had a shakeup in his legal team. His top lawyers for his impeachment defense all effectively bailed out, right?
That's right. We saw the original lawyers who had been working on this impeachment trial sort of all leave last weekend. There's been conflicting reports about why they left. There was some reports that this was about money, that they were concerned that they weren't going to get paid, or that the president was concerned that they were being overpaid. We've also seen reports that they just didn't agree with the president's strategy, that or the former president, that Trump wanted to argue that there really was election fraud and that the election really was stolen. And they were trying to convince him that that really wasn't going to work, that was not the question at hand. And in fact, if he insisted upon making his defense be this sort of unvalidated false claim of elections being stolen, that he might actually hurt himself more than help him. And so we did see the president's legal team replaced. He has two new attorneys who started this week and who did file these briefs and didn't really make the case that the president was not at fault because the election was stolen. And they hinted at it, but it was not the crux of their argument.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital. It's the week in Washington. We're looking at the top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see come out of this impeachment trial for the former president? Should the Senate vote to convict him? Should they further vote to not allow him to seek office in the future? Another option on the table, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do we know, Ginger, at this point about what this trial is going to look like? Witnesses, video, long, extended debates, or shorter?
Yeah, we are expecting there to be video. We have seen reporting that the Democrats have enlisted sort of people who are experts at producing, organizing, cutting videos that are used in trials. So expect to see footage. I mean, this, as I said already, you know, this was not events that are a mystery to us or that we didn't see. I was in the Capitol on January 6th. So I saw them firsthand. And I think most Americans at some point have seen this. So there will be footage. And I think they're going to try to really lay it out in a way that bolsters their case, not just sort of the emotional parts of watching again as people storm the U.S. Capitol, but putting the timeline together and the pieces. Witnesses, we haven't seen depositions, so we haven't seen any evidence about witnesses at this point. That could change, although in the past they have had a process that sort of let us know what witnesses we were going to see as we got closer, and that hasn't happened. And then the mechanics of it, you know, the Senate still has a lot of work to do. They still have cabinet secretaries that President Biden has named and that have not been approved yet. Senate Democrats are just now today, I believe, taking over the committees that they run in the Senate. It's taken them a little while. So there's still some open questions about, is the Senate going to try to do other work and how many hours a day they're going to spend on this impeachment? And because of that, how many days or weeks it could take for them to finish?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in St. Lawrence. Mike, hi.
Hey, hi. I just want to make one thing clear. The last time there was an impeachment where Trump definitely committed some crimes, the Senate was in charge. I mean, the Republicans were in charge of the Senate. And they would not allow a lot of information to come to the floor that could have been had the Democrats been in charge at that time. This time around, the Democrats are in charge, so there will be a much more detailed description of what transpired on January 6th. The Republicans won't be able to block it as much as they did during the other impeachment. That's all I have to say.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. So, Ginger, yeah, that compare and contrast to an impeachment of a Republican president with Republicans running the Senate versus with Democrats now running the Senate.
Yes, I think that we're going to see a lot of procedural votes, in fact, in the Senate over how this proceeds. And as the caller points out, the Democrats control the Senate, but just barely. And that means we're probably going to have to see Vice President Kamala Harris on the floor breaking ties, casting votes in this process. But I do think we'll see a little bit more. We saw, you know, last week that vote to try to dismiss the whole thing failed, but not by a lot. And so Democrats are going to be able to allow more evidence if they want, allow more discussion or debate, allow more questions. I think that we will see some of that. But I also think that Democrats are aware that if they spend too much time, or this is perceived as being purely political, that they risk not only losing any possible Republicans that will go with them, although no one at this point thinks they have enough to actually convict, but public sentiment, that they are conscious that they need to sort of present a case that not only persuades some senators, but also the public.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital. It's the week in Washington. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Coming up, a related issue. Where do you think the Republican Party should go from here? A conflict over two high-profile members of the Republican caucus in the U.S. House. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor for NBC News Digital. It's the week in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on impeachment and a debate among Republicans over two high-profile members of the House caucus. And Ginger, let's talk about that. On one hand, we have Congressional Representative Liz Cheney under fire from Republicans for voting for impeachment in the House. On the other hand, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, Democrats want her off of committees, questions among Republicans. Tell us a tale of two Republicans there.
Right. We're dealing with a real Republican fight here, just out the gate of having lost just complete control of Washington. They no longer hold either chamber of Congress. They've lost the White House. And I think that we're really seeing a fight here that explains some of the division and the consternation within the Republican Party about where to go. You mentioned Congresswoman Green, newly elected from Georgia, and she is just under fire. I mean, let's be clear, though. There was no mystery about who she was when she was running. She's been repeating conspiracy theories and falsities and attacking gun control advocates for a long time. This is not new information about her. But now that she's a member of Congress, it's getting a renewed round of attention. And so we're going to see a vote in the House to strip her of her committees. This is a rare move, and it's even more rare when the members of a different party do it. So Republicans did it to one of their own members, Steve King, a few years ago after he made some remarks that were racist. And then now we're going to see a different route, which is Democrats announcing that they're going to do it to a Republican and likely have the votes there to do so. And then on the flip side, we see Liz Cheney, who was one of, not the first, but one of the first Republicans to come out in support of impeaching the president, who has been critical of Representative Green and has been critical of former President Trump. And it has caused a lot of criticism within her own party. So we see a challenge to her leadership among other Republicans. And I think this is a real moment where the party is trying to figure out what they do next. There are some who wish that Donald Trump would go away and they would never hear from him again and they would never talk about him again and the party could move on. And there are some who think that Donald Trump started a new chapter in the party and that they should continue in his image and in his methods to shape the party as he wanted it to be.
And we've heard now from Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and some other Republican senators defending Liz Cheney, in McConnell's case, by name, criticizing Representative Green, not by name in McConnell's case, but the inference was clear. What do you make of key Senate Republicans weighing in and trying to put pressure on House Republicans to do something?
Yeah, it's remarkable to see Mitch McConnell weighing in on House members like this. It's well outside of the norm for him, and particularly to have him be weighing in on another chamber. But I think McConnell does view himself as a leader within the party. They don't control the White House anymore. He is the most senior Republican office holder in Washington. And I think that he also knows that the rest of House leadership can't say the things that he said, that McCarthy and Scalise are trying to balance a lot of different personalities and people, and that he could say things more bluntly than some of his colleagues across the Capitol building could. But it is remarkable. And I think it does show McConnell's hand. He wants the party to move on, that he's ready to get past the era of Donald Trump. And I think it's also important to remember that, just as I was saying earlier, this impeachment trial involves judges, these senators who lived it. He lived it and was a target. And I think that that has made him sort of have a very personal perspective about what's going on. And that's what we're seeing in some of his comments.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital, looking at the top stories in national politics. We invited your calls on impeachment. Let's go back to your calls now. John is with us in Heartland. John, hi.
Hi. Hi. I just have a quick question, and mine is more of a, in the future, do we really want to open up, you know, potentially a can of worms of going back to prior administrations and looking for impeachment opportunities that would, you know, be potentially valid and tie up our government with looking at things that have been done in the past?
John, thanks a lot for the call. And Ginger, I know Republicans have raised that. Well, what if somebody wanted to go back and impeach Obama or counting backwards? Democrats have made the case, well, if you can't impeach a former president, is that just a free pass in January for presidents on their way out of office? So what's been the argument on that?
Yeah, I think you summarized the both sides of that argument pretty well. I think there is a case to be made about where you draw the line, right? How far back can you go? And some of the counter to that argument is that impeachments are inherently political. They are a political process. And I say political, but not partisan. And how the lawmakers act is not without political consequences. I mean, we know that there were political consequences for some Republicans after impeaching Bill Clinton. So it's not an act without risk, right? I think if someone tried to impeach George W. Bush or Barack Obama now, that it would face quite a bit of political backlash. It would be seen as a time waster. But the Democrats make a point as well. There was not meant to be a situation where if you were president and you were at the end of your term, you could just do whatever you wanted at the end and not face any consequences. And I do think that part of the difference here, too, is that Barack Obama and George W. Bush, they can't run for president again. They're prohibited by the Constitution from holding another term. But Donald Trump could. And I think that's a factor, too, that's weighing heavily on the deliberations that we see these lawmakers making, not just about the constitutionality, but in general about what they should do.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Nate now in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you. I was going to say that I'm somebody who believes Trump did do impeachable offenses, but I don't expect enough Republicans to have the moral fortitude to hold him to it. But Donald Trump did lie about the elections for weeks and months. He also told the people at the crowd that day that he was going to go to the Capitol building with them. I'm kind of suspicious if he disappeared because he knew there was a chance something bad might happen and was willing to give it time to play out, especially since this is one of the rare presidents who actually seem to have trouble committing to a peaceful transfer of power. I'll also note that on impeaching former people, we have impeached government officials who were out of office at the time of the impeachment in the past.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. And Nate, I think pointing to something Democrats are going to be doing, Ginger, kind of that timeline of what the president said and when and what his intentions were.
I think that's right. We're going to hear Democrats sort of really trying to build this timeline and make clear that these weren't just random events occurring at the same time. They weren't happening independent of one another. That people were at this rally that the president had in front of the White House, that he told them to go to the Capitol, that he told them he was going with them, and that many of these people thought that he was walking down Pennsylvania Avenue with them. And that was a factor in their decision to do this, that they didn't just march to the Capitol on a whim. He had encouraged them to do so.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last couple of minutes, I want to switch gears. We're going to spend some time in another conversation today on COVID relief. You have been looking at the role of Vice President Harris in advancing the White House package. What do you see? What role do you see her playing in selling this potential legislation?
Yeah, that's right. Our reporters were looking at how she was playing this, and we saw her last week give interviews in West Virginia and Arizona and local television stations. And there was a little bit of backlash. Senator Joe Manchin criticizing her for giving that interview. And it really sort of underscores the challenge that Harris is facing. She doesn't have a portfolio. She doesn't have something that is just hers to do. And so she's been sort of everywhere, but nowhere. And then when she does sort of pop up on her own, she faces criticism from a senator of her own party. But just like we were talking about impeachment, I mean, her days aren't done, right? She's got a lot she has to do. She's going to have to be in the Senate. She's going to have to be breaking ties. And as COVID relief, if they decide to move ahead without Republicans, she's going to have to cast that deciding vote. So I think that there's still a lot of questions about how she operates and what her role is and what she's doing for the next 4 years that we really haven't seen answered yet, and that it is unclear that she knows the answers.
And if you can take just a few moments, Ginger, as you mentioned, you were in the Capitol complex on January 6th. What is it like being there now for you and just for this workplace that you journalists and the politicians all share?
Yeah, you know, I've worked on the Hill for many years, less so in the last year, obviously, because of COVID and before that. But I was on the Hill, you know, it was a place I went to work every day. For a historic landmark. It was a landmark in the world, but it was also my office building for a long time. And I think lots of us who were there that day, you know, I hid in my office for 2.5 hours until we could be escorted out. It will forever be changed. And it is different when I've gone back now. There are fences, the National Guard, there are security. And so it is changed. It is changed forever. But I think a lot of us are optimistic that it will go back to being a place that really just stands for freedom and democracy and what we want.
Ginger, thanks for joining us. That's Ginger Gibson from NBC News. She joined us for a look at the top stories in national politics.